Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferraci, your health and wellness resource, where you get the whole scoop and nothing but the scoop.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Whole Scoop. We are the Health and Wellness Radio Show here on Blog Talk Radio, where our guests are always highly credentialed in the topics of which we discuss. That's the stipulation for being on this show. If you're joining us for the first time, know that the information you're getting is current and it's professional and it's accurate. So those are the things you need to remember about this particular show. I am your host, Carol Ferraci, a registered licensed dietitian who's been practicing way longer than ever, I want to admit, so I'm just not going to anymore. I've earned the right to not say exactly how long. I am the founder of Naturally Nutrition. You can check me out at naturallynutritioninc.com. So if you didn't get that part about everybody having to be credentialed on the show, remember that, okay, because that's what makes us different than everybody else. When you get your information from the Whole Scoop, you are getting information that is absolutely up to date, and it's information from the people who teach your healthcare professionals. So that's always good to know. Tonight's show is a great topic. We're talking about reversing disease or disease process, and yes, it can be reversed, and we are going to talk about that extensively with fabulous guests tonight. But before I get into that, know that I've got to take care of some business. Our guest, the call-in number is 347-855-8894, 347-855-8894. You can also direct questions and comments to our Facebook page. Our group page, the Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio Group, the Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio Group. And you'll find additional information about what we do from thewholescoopradio.com. Remember to follow us on Facebook and get in that Blog Talk Radio group. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you want to hear. Tell us what you want to see us expand on or want to see us cut out. We're good for anything. 347-855-8894. We will take questions later on in the show. At that time, I'll call out the last four digits of your telephone number so that you know it's you, and you'll be on the air. But before you can do that, if you're calling in to listen to the show and you want to ask a question, you got to press the number one to get in the queue to let me know that you have a question. So one more time on that number, it's 347-855-8894, and we're going to move on now. So who do we have? We have one of our she's been on the show before. She's a fabulous plethora of information. But she's just so much more than just a plethora of information. She is Susan Clyde Leap, therapist with an MBA from Texas Tech University, a Master's of Science in Nutrition from Texas Women's University. She's received extensive training in immunology, adverse food reactions, practical application of dietary treatment for food-sensitive patients. And since introducing delayed type food hypersensitivity testing and therapy into her private practice, she's seen firsthand how the proper identification of food and chemical triggers, followed by implementation of a proven customized lifestyle eating and performance protocol, can help patients reduce inflammation and recover their health. She's considered one of the most experienced countries. She is actively involved in the training and mentoring of dietitians, including yours truly, who are interested in applying this cutting-edge protocol into their practice, as well as presenting at local, state, national dietetic association conferences. She's a frequent lecturer in local, state, and national level. She uses an integrative and functional medicine approach to medical nutrition therapy. Susan's approach is in nutrition and healthcare from integrative and functional perspective. This approach is firmly entrenched in the belief that the body has the capacity to heal itself if given the right tools and if underlying causes of disease are addressed. Okay, all of that being said, let me just tell you, Susan Linke is one of the most comprehensive, competent, just amazing professionals that I have ever had the pleasure to know personally. And I am honored that she's on our show tonight, and I can't wait to talk with her. So let's just say hello to Susan. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Carol. Thank you for that really nice introduction. Thank you. And it's really always an honor to be on your show.
Well, thank you. But you deserve a whole lot more, and we'll get to that. I'm sure it'll come through loud and clear. All you got to do is start talking, and it'll all happen, you know, because that's just who you are, and I'm just thrilled. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Carol.
Yeah. So, Susan, you know, we're talking about reversing the disease process and just in disease in general, and I know that you and I have had extensive conversations about this, but kind of wanted to just give people a perspective of what we're talking about. You know, it was astounding to me because, again, we talk about this stuff all the time, but actually, in actuality, 50 million Americans, 50, 50, 20% of the population or more than 1 in 5 suffer from some type of autoimmune disease. Women are most likely or more likely than men to be affected. In some estimates, they say 75% of those affected, some 30 million people, are women. So, I mean, there's a little bit of a lopsided statistic for you that the majority of women have autoimmune responses. I think that would be a topic for a different show, but maybe kind of scratch the surface tonight. But that's just astounding, 50 million people. I'm going to just kind of run down some examples of autoimmune diseases just in case anybody is wondering. Rheumatoid arthritis, systemic lupus, inflammatory bowel disease, multiple sclerosis, diabetes, Guillain-Barré, and chronic inflammatory demyelinating polyneuropathy, and even psoriasis. So it runs the gamut. I mean, anything can pretty much happen when the immune system is fighting itself. So in your practice and what you've seen just in general as a healthcare practitioner, would you agree, disagree, say that, you know, that some of these things, I mean, the list of autoimmune is just absolutely extensive. So how is it when you see somebody, pretty much I'm guessing that the majority of people that you see are autoimmune situations, and so then what is it that you tell them? Like, because people, these things are scary to people, and they get all kinds of information from different sources, and then they see different doctors, and then they end up with 20 meds, and nothing's working, and they feel worse than they did before. And so how do you handle that?
Uh-huh. And let me add thyroid disease to the one of the conditions that you also mentioned. And because that was one of the things I first realized when I started practicing, was so many of my patients were on thyroid medication, and doctors typically don't look when they see a elevated TSH level and they put their patients on thyroid medication, they don't dig a little deeper to find out if it's autoimmune thyroid. And I believe about 80% of hypothyroidism is autoimmune in nature, and the doctors are treating the symptom and not really treating, addressing the root. And what I tell patients is the thyroid, if it's autoimmune in nature, the thyroid is the victim. It is not the culprit. And so if you're just dealing with the victim but not really dealing with the culprit, you're never really going to address the underlying issue of the autoimmune thyroid. And a lot of times, if you address the immune system, you can reverse autoimmune thyroid disease. We've seen patients whose thyroid nodules disappeared, where their thyroid antibodies went down to normal or at least reduced. So that's the exciting part about a lot of diseases, including autoimmune diseases. They are reversible in many cases.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I'm sorry put that on the list. No, I'm. Thank you for bringing that up. I really should have put that on the list, and I didn't. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. So that is one of the things that I look at when my patients come to me is, do you have a condition that might be autoimmune, even if the doctor hasn't pinned it. And another one is celiac disease. A lot of doctors think that celiac disease, or a lot of people think that celiac disease is a digestive disorder, when it's really not necessarily. Some people don't even have any gut manifestations of celiac disease at all. And a lot of people don't have any manifestations, period. And it's called silent celiac. And sometimes people might just have osteoporosis, or they might just have anemia. And the root cause may be celiac disease. I had a patient, for example, with schizophrenia, and there is a relationship potentially between schizophrenia and celiac disease. So I asked her to go to her doctor and get checked for celiac disease. And the doctor said, well, do you have diarrhea? And she said, no. And the doctor said, well, then you don't have celiac disease. When nothing could be further from the truth. Sometimes people have migraines, or they may have infertility, and all of these conditions can be associated with celiac disease, but maybe they have no gastrointestinal symptomology at all. So it's always good to, that is one thing, if you have anemia, especially if you have iron deficiency, if you have migraine or osteoporosis or any other sort of, autoimmune diseases kind of go hand in hand. So once you have one, you have a higher tendency to have celiac disease also. So if you have an autoimmune disease, be it thyroid or lupus or Crohn's disease, then go the extra step and get your celiac disease screened for. And sometimes doctors, once they hone in on one condition, they stop there and they don't dig a little deeper to find out if you have celiac disease too. So that is an important one to rule out, because it causes deficiencies. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was just going to add something. I was just going to say that most physicians don't even consider celiac disease. So to dig a little deeper and look for celiac, they don't even go there. You know, that's part of it as well. So thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, you're right.
They're looking for the classic symptoms, but a lot of people don't have the classic symptoms.
Yeah. You know, there's so many symptoms of celiac disease that it's just even hard to classify. It's like better to get tested than to not, because there's so many different symptoms and people react differently. So it's a shame, though, because most physicians won't even consider it. You're right. And that's a prime example right there.
Yeah, and you know what? A lot of people notice that they feel better when they take gluten out of their diet. But as an admonition, I would caution anyone to please get tested for celiac disease before you pull gluten out of your diet, because once it's out of your diet, then you really can't go back and get an accurate blood test for celiac disease.
Good point. So then let's just take the average person, because there are so many factors environmentally, also in conjunction with what we eat or the types of things that we eat that have caused autoimmune responses or inflammatory issues, that if you just take an average person in today's society, you know, this is what I see, and you feel free to chime in, stop me, do whatever, but if I'm just a Joe Blow trying to make it through the week or the day or whatever, you know, I'm taking care of a family, I'm taking care of my own issues, I'm taking care of maybe a partner or a spouse, and I'm doing all those things that come naturally. But part of that also is trying to make sure that everybody's fed. So I don't always time, because I'm also working. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go somewhere. I'm going to get something really fast, but I'm going to do it in as healthy as I can make it. But, you know, I've gone to the grocery store. I buy a bag of of salad, or and I put some stuff together, but you know, maybe I throw some McDonald's in that as well, or I hate to say just McDonald's, but any fast food or any kind of already prepared situation, because it's fast and because I have to keep going. And then, you know, I'm gonna clean the house, and I'm gonna use a bunch of different things to clean with, and a lot of those things I'm exposed to on a daily basis or a weekly basis or a monthly basis, whatever the schedule might be. But in the meantime, I'm running. My immune system is trying to play catch up. I'm exposed to whatever anybody else is around me, either at work or my own kids or my grandkids or whatever the situation might be, that they may have been around other people. And so now my immune system continuously fights just on a daily basis, trying to get through the day. And then I put something into my system and it just gets confused and it starts to say that, hey, you know what, I don't like this and it's time to fight. So then I feel like crap and then I start to develop symptoms and I start to do all kinds. And it's a vicious cycle that everybody seems to be living these days. So how do we pick that apart, and how do we teach people to learn about these things maybe prior to getting to a point where they feel so crappy and that they actually have a diagnosis of any of these things? Do you know? I mean, do you have any words of wisdom for that?
I think what you've just said is a starting point, and one is to create awareness. And I think if we at least start to become aware of what we're doing to ourselves, then we can stop and try to evaluate our situation and see where we can start getting control of it, and whether it's delegating responsibility or changing our eating habits or, you know, one simple thing is when we get sick and we get put on antibiotics, for example, one simple thing that we can do is take a probiotic afterwards, because anything that destroys that gut flora will absolutely alter our immune system. And taking control of the diet the diet and the gut microbiome is really important. So, and making sure that we get enough vitamin D, whether it's from the sun, when you get a screening. You know, we were talking about autoimmune disease a minute ago, and one thing that's very common, almost unanimous with autoimmune disease, is a vitamin D deficiency. And a lot of studies make a direct correlation between the vitamin D levels and the autoimmune severity. And that's something that when you go for a regular checkup, doctors don't usually check for vitamin D, but most of them will if you ask them to. So next time you go to your doctor for a checkup, ask for vitamin D level, and don't just let the doctor call you and tell you that your levels are normal. Always ask for a number, because you want to monitor over time if your vitamin D levels are going down, if they're going up. And also you want to be not at the bottom of the barrel of normal, because normal can range, depending on the lab, somewhere between 30 and 100. And a lot of doctors will tell you that you're normal if you're right at 30 or 31. And you really don't want to be right there at the edge. You'd want to be a little bit higher. And different organizations will range in what their recommendations are. I like to shoot for a 50, level of 50, a vitamin D, but especially when somebody has an autoimmune condition, I can almost guarantee that those levels are going to be low. So that's one thing you can do easily to help booster your immune system. And I like to say that the immune system is like a bucket, because it has to deal with all of life's stressors. And at some point when those stressors become too much, then your immune system just can't deal with anything and it starts to overflow. So figuring out what those stressors are for you, whether it's poor diet, lack of exercise, stress, trying to figure out ways to reduce that stress from your life can be very helpful in keeping that immune system bucket from overflowing.
Well, you know, you bring up a really good point, Susan, because, you know, we hear so many things about vitamin D and now vitamin K and, you know, some other things, B12. But what does it really mean to people and what do they do with it? It's just what I get a lot is, hey, will B12 help me? Because I just picked some up and I'm going to start taking it. Is that a good thing? You know, I think it'll give me energy. And it might, but, you know, it depends on what and how much and why. And people just don't, they don't really understand. They hear bits and pieces, but they don't really understand. And then sometimes they ask their docs and they don't always get a full picture of why they might need something or even be able to relate it to themselves. What do you tell them in that situation?
A lot of doctors, most doctors, haven't had any nutrition courses at all. And so you really do have to take your health into your own hands. And if you have a doctor that isn't responsive, then perhaps get a second opinion or perhaps even change doctors. And find one that is a little bit open-minded. Maybe find a doctor that's conventional plus functional and integrative that thinks a little bit more holistically about your health. Make sure you have a doctor that listens to you and doesn't just spend 10 or 15 minutes with you and walks in with the prescription pad ready, because there really is a lot you can do to prevent and to reverse, and diet is a very important part. And there's a lot of doctors that absolutely don't realize just how much diet can affect our health. So having that kind, you know, finding the right doctor is really important. But also, a lot of these vitamins work together. B12 doesn't work in isolation. A lot of the B vitamins work together. Magnesium can affect thiamine levels. Zinc can affect copper levels. And so my preference is to test for people's vitamin levels and mineral levels and antioxidant levels, and not just to guess, because if B12 is low, then B5 might be low, or folate might be low, or some of the other B vitamins might be low. And B vitamins are partially made by your gut bacteria. So if your B vitamins are low, is it because you're taking an acid, or is it because you poor bacterial balance, or what's going on there? So even addressing why you have a deficiency is really important as well. And that's another big topic, is so many people are on medications for reflux. And when you lower stomach acid, then you impair your ability to absorb calcium, you impair your ability to absorb zinc, magnesium, iron, and then vitamin D can't be absorbed without magnesium. So by impairing magnesium absorption, you're affecting your vitamin D. And it's, you know, your hip bone's connected to your leg bone and that kind of thing. They're just all related. So it is better, if you can, to test. And the test I personally use is called SpectraCell. It's not the only one out there. But I like it because it tests for 30 different micronutrients. The only major one it does not test for is iron. But it gives me a good idea of where all your B vitamins might be. And it looks at vitamins A, D, E, and K. It looks at a lot of the minerals and antioxidants. So that way I'm not creating an imbalance by recommending one nutrient, because I can see the whole big picture.
Well, thank you. I think you just did vitamins in one fell swoop there, and you did it perfectly well. I could never have done it as well as you did. So, I think the biggest point that you made, though, is that a lot of these vitamins are interchangeable and they work together in consortium. And I always use the analogy with people that the body is you can make it akin to a car. You know, there are
yep.
there are things in the automobile that have to run appropriately. You put transmission fluid in, you know, for the transmission. You do oil for the engine. You do gasoline in the tank to make it go, but you have to keep certain air pressure in the tires. Everything that, all that stuff works together in order to make the car run and run appropriately. And you can run a car for a whole number, very long period of time if you keep it up. The very same thing is true about the body. Whatever you put in the body has to react to. So if you put something in that's artificial, you put something in that the body doesn't recognize and it has to find something to do with it, and it stores it in a place that isn't necessarily going to do you any favors, then at some point that's going to come back and you're going to know about it, and it's going to cause you an issue. So if it's kind of like the reflux meds that you were just talking about. In order to take a medication, you have to shut down a particular system in the body to make that medication. That's why the medication works, because it shuts down the acid production in the stomach. Well, there's a reason we have acid production in the stomach. There's a reason that particular system is there. So what is the underlying issue for causing that acid to be out of whack? Nobody ever seems to look at. But we would look at it absolutely in a car. We would say, oh, hey, this might be causing that, or if this is off, then that's why this is happening. But we don't do that with the body. We never, ever do. We just kind of look at one system, and we move on to another, and then we send off to a specialist for something else that we think might be happening, and nobody actually looks at the whole system, which is why I was so glad to hear you say, hey, you might want a functional, holistic person. And it does make a big difference. It's a matter of, I think, teaching people to think differently about our healthcare. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And taking healthcare into your own, not totally into your own hands, but realizing that you are in control of your health, and nobody's going to care about your health as much as you do. And so it's like anything. You have to put your team together. Whether you're remodeling a home or whatever you do, you always want to put the best team together. Well, I think the most important team, or one of the most important teams that you can put together for you, is your healthcare team. So look at it that way. You should be the one dictating who's going to be on that team. And you can look at each doctor as an interview. Interview each doctor. Do they seem concerned about your health, or are you just another number? And, somebody the other day was talking to me about doctors like a modern day, I hate to say it, like the old time religious leaders that wore their robes and everybody bowed down to them. And I fully respect doctors, so I hope I'm not coming across as disrespectful. I fully respect doctors. But as with anything, you're going to have good plumbers and bad plumbers, and you're going to have good teachers and bad teachers, and you're going to have some doctors that made straight A's in school and others that didn't. So just because somebody's a doctor doesn't necessarily mean that they're a good one. And so it's really up to us to form the best team. And it's not always a doctor. You might want a good massage therapist, a good yoga instructor, a good trainer at the gym. All of those people can form, and of course a good nutritionist or dietitian on your team that's going to address your health issues.
Well, and I think you said it best when you said there are good and bad in everything. And I think that we pretty much, I think we've automatically as a society just been intimidated by physicians. And I agree. This isn't about bashing the physicians in any way, shape, or form. This is about saying, hey, you know what? We have just been trained that if somebody's a doctor, oh, wow, they know so much more than I do, so I'm going to not ask any questions. But it's imperative that we ask questions because, just because you're right, just because they're a doc doesn't necessarily mean they're the right doc for you. They might be an excellent physician, and they probably are an excellent physician, but maybe that person's approach to how they handle certain things may not be congruent with what you need as a person, and you need to be aware of that so that you can pick the right person that's best for you. It's like when you're picking a surgeon, and personally, I had to have surgery a few years back, and it was recommended to me that I see a particular surgeon, and that surgeon was highly recommended. He was highly respected and still is, and does a fabulous job. And even his staff said, "You're going to love him." And I met him, and he said to me, he did not want to listen to anything that was important for me. He just told me that I needed to face reality, which was actually his reality, not mine. And I looked at him and I said, "You know, thank you, but you're not the person for me." And I walked out, and a friend of mine was with me, and she's like, "But he's the doctor. You've got to listen to him." And I'm like, "There are others, and I need to find somebody who will listen to me." So I moved on, went to somebody else, and that person said, "Well, do you want to have surgery right now? Because you really don't need to have it right now, but, you know, there will come a time when you need it." And I said, "If I can avoid it right now, that would be a good thing. And if, you know, if there's anything that can be done that maybe can prevent it, can we work on it?" And she said, "Sure, let's see what we can do. But if it gets to be too bad, let me know, and then that's when we'll schedule it." Well, that was a year and a half later. And you know, it did get to be a little too bad, and I had to have the surgery. But the most important thing was that person chose to listen to me, and I so respected that you know, I was sold on her and still continue to be sold on her to this day, because I know that she considers patients. And so that's a totally different kind of thing than what we're used to.
It is. And, you know, one thing that I've been helping my mom find her team of doctors, and I really have found reviews online actually to be really helpful, and I do read every single review, and there's a lot of doctors that may have 50 or 80 reviews and they have 4.8 stars or 5 stars, and that's been super helpful for me actually to help my mom find some good doctors. And sometimes when you have a really good doctor, all the good doctors know all the good doctors. So if you have a really good doctor, even asking, you know, if you need an eye doctor, you need an ear doctor, you need, sometimes asking one doctor for a referral to another doctor will also help you find another, you know, type of doctor to add to the team.
Right, right. And that's important. You kind of have to... you just have to feel it out. What works for one doesn't always work for the next one. And so, yeah, you're right. And so yeah, I'm glad that you're helping your mom, because it's important. And, you know, I've had that conversation. By the way, we do have a special guest with us. My mom's with us tonight. So say hi, Mom.
Hello.
She's hearing this, and you know, we're always talking about her doctors and who's working with her. And she's got a pretty good team of doctors for herself now, but it took some changes and some working to kind of say, "Hey, you know, this one seems to really be paying attention to you." And that's important. And I think she's happy with her choices right now, and that's a good thing. But getting back to reversing the disease, it kind of went off a little bit there. When we're talking about this, let's just kind of run through a little bit of a scenario, Susan. Would you just humor me for a minute?
Sure.
Let's take the pre-diabetic. Let's just draw a picture of the pre-diabetic person. Can you give us an overview of what that person kind of looks like on a general basis?
Yes, and I do have to qualify. I don't specialize in diabetes, so I focus more on patients that have autoimmune conditions. So, you know, keep that in mind here. But yeah, But
and I'm not but it's just a general conversation for there's a point to be asking. So we'll wrap it up, I promise.
Yeah, not a problem. I just wanted to make that qualifier. But usually somebody that's pre-diabetic may have the beginnings of insulin resistance, and that can have a relationship with vitamin D deficiency. They tend to be increasing in weight, so maybe it's diet, maybe it's lack of exercise, maybe it's bacterial imbalance. Your microbiome absolutely can affect your weight. And as a matter of fact, farmers have used antibiotics for a long time to increase the weight of their cattle. And we know that antibiotics increase body weight as well, which is another reason that people should take a probiotic or drink kombucha or some form of probiotic in order to get that bacterial balance back, because that can also contribute to overweight, leading to an increase in the propensity to develop diabetes and things like that. But yes, checking vitamin D levels and making sure those are optimum, addressing gut health, addressing weight and exercise, all of those things can help prevent somebody. And actually now they know that diabetes can even be reversed, is what I'm seeing in recent research.
Well, and that pretty much is what I wanted to wrap back to, because you mentioned the microbiome, and that's where I was headed with that. When most of the time when I talk to people about pre-diabetes, if I say, hey, try a prebiotic and a probiotic and do this combination, and sometimes, you know, holistically, apple cider vinegar and a combination of some other things, most people will, you know, not, I won't say bounce back, but I will say that their numbers improve. And as their numbers improve, and then we start talking about, you know, shaping what they're doing with their lives and how they can, like, kind of tweak some changes and make some changes on a daily basis to kind of prevent what's, you know, that from going in the opposite direction some more. I've had some real good positive results with that. So that's pretty much where I was going, because what you did was and I just needed a general kind of overview of what that person generally looks like, or some of the things that happen in that particular situation, because it's scary for people when they get that as a diagnosis and they think, oh my God, what do I do now? And you just kind of wrapped it up with, in general terms of, these are the kinds of things that generally occur with that. So in case you didn't realize it, I think what you did was you just gave people a sigh of relief, like, oh, well, you know, if I can work on it, then you gave them some hope, you know. And it doesn't mean it's going to work for everybody. It just means that at least it gives you something to be heighten your awareness and to say, hey, you know what, there might be some things that I can do to take charge of my own health, which is what we've been talking about, and how all of these things are interchangeable. So thank you for that. I wasn't trying to put you on the spot.
Absolutely. No problem. And chromium is another one that that I test for with the SpectraCell micronutrient test. And chromium is also very heavily involved in blood sugar regulation. So that might be another one that's low, especially if somebody's having, you know, blood sugar highs and lows, might be a chromium deficiency as well.
Good point. You want to give us a scenario on just a typical food sensitive person and running through one of your just kind of give us an anecdotal story on one of your patients and how they've improved their own lifestyle.
Sure. So the interesting thing about food sensitivities is it all starts in the gut, but whenever somebody has a food sensitivity, their immune system starts producing these inflammatory chemicals that have all kind of funky names like interleukins and prostaglandins. And those chemicals travel throughout the bloodstream and can affect any organ. So somebody might eat chicken and develop a migraine. Somebody else might eat chicken and it causes diarrhea or throwing up or arthritis or fatigue or anxiety or mood swings. So it can affect any organ. And a lot of doctors then will treat the symptom. They'll treat the migraine. They'll treat the diarrhea, but they won't realize that it's even food-related. And one interesting case, for example, was a young man that I had in my office a few years ago who had been to 9 different doctors for severe abdominal pain, and none of his doctors could figure it out. And so he was on his way to the Mayo Clinic to figure it out. But in the meantime, one of his doctors who found out about the food sensitivity testing said, you know what, it can't hurt. Why don't you try the food sensitivity testing? Your appointment to the Mayo Clinic is a few weeks away yet, so try it and see. So this young man was so afraid to eat because of the pain that he was just eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, grape jelly sandwiches daily, and then he had kind of sort of backed himself up into a corner, and that's pretty much all he was eating. So we did the food sensitivity test, and guess what he came back reactive to? He was reactive to wheat, and he was reactive to grapes, and he was reactive to peanuts, among other things.
Wow.
So he was reactive to his PB&J. So I looked at his safe food list, the foods he did not react to, and I suggested exactly what he needed to have the next day for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And within 24 hours, he called me back and he said his daily abdominal pain was completely gone, and he never did have to go to the Mayo Clinic. But it's a little bit funny, I guess, in a sad sort of way, that 9 different doctors didn't even think, when somebody's having abdominal pain, they didn't even think to address diet. But so that was a neat story. And then, you know, similar, I had another 7-year-old boy who the doctor was screening for cancer and all kinds of things, also severe abdominal pain. And finally, the doctor said, it's all in your head. Go see, a behavioral therapist. And fortunately, they found out about food sensitivity testing, and we were able to figure out what foods were triggering that little boy's symptoms, and he was able to go back to school and live a normal life. But doctors a lot of times just don't, even when your stomach's hurting, they don't really focus on foods as the cause, which is a little bit ironic.
I think it's a lot ironic. It goes back to the whole car analogy. You know, we wouldn't put sugar in a gas tank. We'd put gasoline in a gas tank. But when we put, you know, something else in the stomach that shouldn't be there, we don't even think to address it. We don't think about what might be, you know, going into the body. So it's just amazing to me. I've never really gotten over that.
No, and, you know, when I was talking a minute ago, I was reminded of the phrase, it's all in your head. And if I had a dollar for every patient that told me that their doctor told them it's all in your head, boy, I'd be living on some condo and on a beach in Florida somewhere right now. it's pretty sad, but I hear that all the time. It's all in your head. And the reason is, because if a doctor can't physically see it with a scope, when they go, they either do a colonoscopy or an endoscopy, and they don't see anything, then they assume that there's nothing there, when in reality, you can't really see an immune reaction happening. But an immune reaction can definitely cause a whole lot of symptoms, including digestive issues.
Yeah. We could do a whole show on the fact that people don't, people meaning the healthcare practitioners in general, other than us, don't think about food. We just automatically go to anything but. So it's amazing to me. I just don't know what to say about that anymore. I'm truly lost about with that at this point, because there's just no changing it. I can't seem to change it.
Yeah, can I bring up another topic about just healthy foods? And I do want to say that, sorry, I don't mean to take over your show, Carol, sorry.
Please do. But before you do, let me just do this, because we are running close on time, and I just want to make sure that people have, the people who have called in and are listening, if you want to ask a question, press the number one. To get in the queue for questions, let us know you have a question, or go ahead and blog them out and send them to us and tell us you know what you want us to address. So I just wanted to do that. It's all yours. Go for it.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to mention that food sensitivities don't have to be foods that we consider unhealthy, and that's the difficult part to figure out about food sensitivities. You can have a food sensitivity to just about anything. It can be vanilla, or it can be cumin, or salmon, or rice. So, and food sensitivities can have a three-day delay, and they're also dose-dependent. So you might have half a cup of strawberries one day, and then nothing happens, and then you have them on day two, and nothing happens. But maybe on day three, you've had a, you know, three-day dose of strawberries, and you have a symptom on the third day. I actually had a patient who was bound for gallbladder removal because she was having so many problems. And before she got her surgery, she went ahead and did the food sensitivity test and eventually found out that it was her strawberries that were causing the problem. And she never had to have her gallbladder out. So, food sensitivities can even affect the gallbladder. There was a doctor in the 60s, Dr. Brenneman, who did a study with his gallbladder patients and took the major allergens out of the diet. And I think the research study says that 100% of his patients got better.
Wow. That's amazing. I don't know that study. Mm-hmm. I have to look at that. That's amazing. Wow.
Yeah, that is amazing.
Great. That's a great example. And I think you make an excellent point, because people automatically go to, well, it must be a bad food if, you know, I got to stay away from the bad foods. Well, that's not necessarily true, you know. It's not necessarily a bad food. It just means you're different than somebody else and you're reacting differently than somebody else might. That's really all it means, is that everybody's different.
Everybody is different, and that's why there's a lot of one-size-fits-all diets out there, and that's another problem that I'm seeing that's a little bit concerning to me, actually. There's, you know, the autoimmune diet and the paleo diet and this diet and that diet, and not to say that any of them are necessarily bad, but they don't reflect that people are unique. And the concerning part about it is that I'm getting more and more patients calling me that are down to 5 foods or 15 foods because they've literally painted themselves into a corner by adopting this diet. You know, they adopt a diet and it doesn't quite work, and then they overlap another diet, or they start pulling out foods from their diet because they're trying to figure out which ones are problems. And before they know it, they're just down to 10 foods, 15 foods. I talked to somebody today, one of my patients. She eats like 3 foods every day. And it's not good. But the nice thing is we do have access to testing so that you don't have to paint yourself into a corner. And we can figure out what food you can eat safely.
Yeah. I think where do we start with this one? Well, actually, at this point, just wrap right in. I was reading something as I was kind of looking at statistics, and it says that in general, foods to be avoided for autoimmune diseases, caffeine, alcohol, sugar, grains, dairy, red meat, and focus on fruits, vegetables, healthy fats, and fish. Now, in general, that's not necessarily bad advice, but, you know, you're talking about grains and dairy and red meat. Okay. As a holistic practitioner, I would agree with that. But that doesn't
yep.
necessarily mean that's going to work for everybody. I mean, of course, caffeine, alcohol, you know, we all know that. But I hate it when they do stuff like that because it doesn't mean that that's going to work for everybody. And the thing that I see is that when they do things like that and it doesn't work, then they become more discouraged and they're more apt to just kind of throwing their hands in the air and not really, you know, just kind of giving up because in their minds, they've eliminated all this stuff and they've eaten healthy. And I'm going to put that in quotation marks and air quotes over the air. And that is a pun. Now what do I do? So they get real frustrated and then they don't always know about food sensitivity because you kind of wrap this whole conversation up with go to your doctor, find out. And most docs don't even consider food. So now we've created this vicious cycle that kind of just breeds depression and apathy, and then it also ultimately breeds the disease process. So, you know, how do we break that cycle in a healthcare environment of what we just described?
Right. I think testing, test, don't guess. And I know some testing can be expensive, but in the long run, it can hone in on what you can eat quickly, or it can hone in on deficiencies quickly, because otherwise, some people are just going to be going from one diet to another, and it may lead to worse health in the long run, or it may just prolong the suffering. And I'm not saying don't try a healthy diet, because if you're eating a food that's highly processed foods and things like that, absolutely try to change your diet to a healthy diet. But if the condition that you're dealing with doesn't improve significantly, then you might need to go the extra step to find out what foods in your current diet might be still causing inflammation, or do you have a deficiency that might be contributing to a leaky gut? And there are definitely some things you can do to fix that leaky gut, because if you have leaky gut or gut permeability, then that's going to promote more food sensitivities down the road. So that needs to be addressed. And it can be addressed rather simply by, in some cases, removing gluten, addressing vitamin D deficiency, addressing bacterial balance. So there's some simple things that we can do to address gut permeability.
Well, we could do about 20 shows on all of that, but I'm gonna say this. When you have somebody that's eating three foods a day, talk about a vicious cycle, because then you also compound that with you're pretty much assuring yourself to become nutrient deficient in some aspect or multiple
yep.
aspects. So if that's the case, then you've just compounded your issue. So it's just an ongoing cycle, and you're right. Test, don't guess is really a great adage to kind of follow and say, all right, and then getting to that testing. People, how can people get in touch with you?
They can Google my name, Susan Linke. My website is Susan Linke, LINKE, SusanLinke.com, or my email is info@SusanLinke.com. And my phone number's on there. I try to answer the phone when I can. I try to be as available as I can to my patients. I'm really all about my patients. I'm very empathetic because I got into this whole field due to my own family healthcare issues, and so I really do care about my patients, and it's a team approach. I listen, and if I can't help you, I make no bones about it. I don't know everything either, so I like to rely on people that I can refer to. If I can't help you, I will help you find somebody else that can.
Well, and I can certainly attest to the fact that, Susan, you're a fabulous practitioner, and I've seen you do just tremendous things for people, and I've seen you go above and beyond. And the thing about Susan is that if she doesn't know, she will either find out or point you in the direction of somebody that does know, and then you can circle right back to her because she probably has already completed that research of what she didn't know, and she knows it now. So, it's just who you are. You're just that. You're a consummate professional, and anybody that sees you as a client is in excellent hands. I can't thank you, Carol.
Thank you. You're very gracious. Thank you.
No, it's well warranted. I don't say that about everybody. I just know let me put it this way. I'm just going to put it right out there. My healthcare team, I want Susan on it. So you would be one of my first choices as for my own personal healthcare team. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Carol.
We don't have any questions. We got a lot of people listening tonight. Nobody's got any questions. We still have about 3 minutes, and if somebody wants to open this up. I know Susan's great. I know she's covered a whole lot, and she usually circles right back to encompassing something that maybe we forgot to talk about, but nobody has any questions? Well, I just got one. I got a smiley face, so they're listening, Susan, so you did a great job. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, you're always so much fun to talk to. I appreciate it. And you're a guru in your own right, too, especially in the area of herbals and those types of things as well.
Well, thank you for that. You have a standing invitation to come back to the Whole Scoop, and you even have a standing invitation to just say, hey, I need to do a show with you because I need to get this out. So you just call me and let me know. And anybody who wants to hear from Susan again, I just know that you do. So we'll make sure that we have her back. And on that note, I think, we've got about 2 minutes left, but I think we'll just say, Susan, if you have anything you want to wrap up with or say anything else, we got 2 minutes, and if not, we can call it a night.
I think just a reminder that that disease is reversible in many cases, and I've seen a lot of patients, including my own family members, that were told that whatever condition they were dealing with was not food related and irreversible. But I have patients with Crohn's disease who are no longer on their Crohn's medication, and the doctor pulled them off because they didn't need it anymore. So it really is amazing how much the body is geared toward fixing itself. If you think about, if you cut your finger, think about how quickly that immune system goes to work in forming a scab and stopping the bleeding. Well, that's the part that we can see, but think about the body on the inside where we don't see, but it doesn't mean it's not happening any less quickly on the inside. And as a matter of fact, the epithelium in your in your digestive tract do regenerate every few days. So the body on the outside and on the inside is completely geared toward healing itself. And if we remove those barriers that are keeping it from doing it, then it can do it much faster.
Excellent way to wrap up. Thank you, Susan. Excellent. I couldn't.
Well, thank you for having me on your show.
You're wonderful. We're looking forward to you coming back, and we can pick any one of those topics we talked about tonight, and just we could talk forever on any one of those. So thank you. Thanks so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it. Everybody, thank you for listening. And remember, I don't say it enough, our shows are archived. So if you missed it tonight, or if you like what you heard and you want to share it, just go back to either blogtalkradio.com/thewholescoop, or you can go to thewholescoopradio.com. All of our shows are on there. I'll post it on the Facebook page too. And we can just kind of go from there. But remember, we do archive, so it's always a good thing to be able to access it on your time. And on that, I'm going to say thank you and good night to everybody, and we'll see you again in a couple of weeks where Allison Stacy Don, who is a licensed psychologist, will be joining us, and we're going to announce that particular topic. So we're going to say goodnight, and I'm going to try to use this outro music again, but it hasn't been working, so we're going to see if it'll play tonight, but if it doesn't, I'm just going to say goodnight. So, Susan, thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
And for some reason, we're not going to get this thing. It's not going to work. So, goodnight, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again. Bye-bye.